Here's the alley-oop, and there's Josh Nebo. Time winds down, and a new career high with that final rejection for Josh Nebo, the man of the night in College Station.
Welcome back to Aggie Hoops Weekly. We had a bit of an unplanned extended hiatus. We had the Thanksgiving holiday, and then that was followed up by some business travel and a cold wherein I lost my voice, although some might argue that that would improve the quality of the podcast. But we are back, and we are here to look at back-to-back wins for Aggie basketball. So, David, where are your thoughts? This has been a bit of a roller coaster since we last talked. So where are you at on the state of Aggie basketball at this point?
Well, during your description of the last few weeks, you failed to mention the one time that we finally thought we had it all together. We logged on, we were ready to talk Aggie hoops, and then Skype just decided that the show wasn't going to happen that night, and that was three nights ago. So I say all these things kind of conspired to put us in the best possible position, right? Because the times we had previously decided to talk, we would have been varying degrees of pissed off or unhappy about a close win against a terrible team. Now none of those things have to happen. None of those things have to exist on tape attached to our name. Instead, we get to talk about what was truly an exhilarating and completely surprising win against Oregon State at home. So I know in the pre-show chat you and I had, we talked about how we will go back through, we'll catch up Orlando, Texas, TAMU-CC, and then Oregon State. But we have to start here, right? I mean, nobody saw this coming. We were healthy underdogs at home. Oregon State had won seven straight. We hadn't shown any life against anybody but the over 300 Ken Palm dregs, and we got to win, man. Like, this is great. I mean, how are you feeling right now? This is fantastic.
This is fantastic. This was the win that I think we were all hoping would come along. It certainly gives the program life. This is what you need to keep these guys plugged in. Yeah, I'm so happy for the team because this was a complete team win. They looked great. This upperclassman looked great. The underclassmen had solid contributions. So, you know, this was a big win at home, kind of during that dead period, the holiday hoops period that Aggie Athletics promotes. And so, you know, you wanted a good momentum builder here, and you got one. You got a really nice momentum builder that kind of gives you some a good direction heading into conference play.
And I'm going to tell you, Blake, with about 8 or 9 minutes left in the second half, they showed a bench shot of us when we were up 10 or 12. And I just saw the desperation written on everyone's face. And it became clear to me just how important this win was going to be. It also became clear to me that if we were to lose that game, it would be 10 times as emotionally devastating as had we lost to Oregon State by 30 and just been run out of the gym off the jump. So I'm glad we held it together. But those bench shots, man, even the yeah, those bench shots you see, Flag, Nebo, the guys up and down the bench, how desperately they needed something. Because in order to survive the Buzz Williams boot camp, you know, horribly congested schedule, you have to be able to layer some success in there somewhere. You have to be able to say, this is what happens when the system works to its fullest potential. This is what it looks like when you guys play to, you know, play to your ceiling. And up until this point, that ceiling was a 3-point win over Troy, a 3-point win over TAMU Corpus Christi, right? Like, those aren't tangible results that you can hold on to that can help you get through the next week of, you know, torturous workouts and awful, awful practice schedules. This is something we can hold on to. This is something where, as things tend to get a little congested as you work into the meat of the SEC schedule, you can look back and say, this is our ceiling. This is what we're capable of. I am really, really excited because it was starting to look like, Blake, I had made my peace with the idea that we just were never going to get that moment. So the fact that we had a really quality win, and we'll touch on this in a second, but this is a quality win and one that we ran away from. It was a 15-point margin of victory, and it wasn't even particularly that close. I mean, I think Oregon State got it within 8 once, like in the last 10 minutes. It was really, really kind of a calm win for the level of underdog that we were. So I don't know where to take it from here other than to say, should we just hit the game mechanics real quick and then talk about our thoughts?
Yeah, go ahead and jump into the game recap, and then we can kind of expand on our thoughts and kind of where we go from here, and then we'll kind of backtrack to the prior few weeks and walk through the evolution of how, how we got to this point.
I think that's great. And so I'm going to start with the first half, as one does when talking about basketball games. And like most of our basketball this season, the first half really wasn't that great. Although I will note there was a stretch where we kind of steered back into the skid. We got things going again, and we actually had built some legitimate momentum, so much so that it took a couple of pretty heinous offensive foul calls against us to kind of slow the momentum and allow Oregon State to regain their footing. At the end of the half, it was a 30-22 Oregon State lead, but we had kind of fired some warning shots, right? It had already felt different to me at that point, the fact that we were able to dig our heels in. I mean, think about the Gonzaga game, right, where once Gonzaga found their footing, we never challenged again, and that was not the case in this first half. So we were able to put some momentum together. I think we had a nice run to go up one or two before we kind of fell apart in the last few minutes. But it was a 30-22 halftime advantage for Oregon State. We had kind of staked our claim. It appeared, at least at some level, like it was going to be slightly different. Until, of course, the second half started, then Oregon State immediately scored a couple buckets. I think there was a technical foul in there. They pushed the lead to 11, maybe 12. And I was thinking, oh, man, here we go again, right? And then what happened next was truly incredible. For the next 8 to 9 minutes, we put it all together. When I say all, we put it all together, every single facet of the game. The end result was a 20-3 run that flipped the game on its ear. Instead of being down 11, we were up 9. And then, like I mentioned at the outset, it never really changed from there. We cruised home, ended up with a 64-49 victory. Blake, what was your favorite thing? I know it's like picking a favorite child, but tell me how you feel, man.
So I think most of our listeners are aware of my affinity for just solid big man play, especially defensively minded big man play. And Josh Nebo was just stellar. And this is going to turn into a bit of a Josh Nebo love fest. But man, that guy has been so solid this year. And I think that this is something that I wanted to touch on later, but I'll go ahead and just hit it now. He has been the engine driving this thing. And I think it took a little bit for Buzz to kind of trust Josh, just because he had been out for so long leading into the season. He had been out with injuries and just trying to rehab and get healthy. I don't think Buzz really knew what to expect. But once Josh was on the floor and once he was able to give 100%, it's quickly become evident how much this team relies on him. I don't think this is the normal style of play that Buzz really wants to utilize, but Nebo has been so dominant that he has no other choice because Josh has been so great inside. This one, 15 points, 7 boards, 8 blocks. 8 blocks, man. It was, and the blocks to just every time it looked like Oregon State might weave their way back into this thing, here comes Nebo with this massive block, and it was a momentum stopper every time. I can't say enough great things about Nebo. You know, we talk about, we got spoiled, right? With Tyler Davis, we got spoiled because he was such a great offensively minded big man. He played good defense. And then on the other side, you had Robert Williams, who was a lot of flash, who was a great defensive big man. So those two combined kind of really, you know, set a really great precedent. And there's been some great Aggie post players over the last 10, 15 years. But, you know, Nebo this year has just, you know, what he's putting together is really incredible. The way he has evolved his offensive game as well. You didn't really think of him as a great offensive player other than just throwing the oops up there and letting him go get the ball and dunk it. But I really like his aggressiveness in the paint. He's finishing strong. He's drawing fouls, but he doesn't have to finish strong. You need him to knock down an 8-footer, he'll hit an 8-footer. He'll knock down a hook shot. You know, he'll get the other post player into a bad position and make an easy bucket. So I really like what I've seen from the evolution of his offense. Game, we knew his defensive game was there, and it's just really cool to see all of that come together.
It is, and I don't really have much to add other than to say it was easily our best performance of the year, and I think there's a chance that it'll stand the test of this season, and I could easily see this remaining on top of the mountain as the best single performance by an A&M player this season. Such was his level of dominance. One nice little wrinkle that I can add to your stat line that you dropped: didn't miss a field goal. I mean, it wasn't even that he was a volume shooter to get to his 15 points. He was 5 for 5 from the field. His 8 blocks matches a career high. I don't know who he's battling with, Blake, but he oscillates between first and second in terms of active blocks leaders in all of D1 college basketball. So, I mean, that's a pretty nice thing to have in your hip pocket, right, to have somebody like that patrolling the rim. But the success down low doesn't just stop with him. Emmanuel Miller, yet again, was huge in terms of turning the rebounding tide in our direction. He had 13 more boards. We were dominant on the glass, a 46-32 advantage. Our third straight game winning the rebounding battle after not winning any of our first seven. I think that's another really, really solid adjustment that we've made, is playing Miller on the opposite block.
Yeah, I think so. He hasn't done a lot offensively, but he has cleaned up the boards, man. And that's exactly what this team needed, is somebody who can go get a loose ball. Go fight for boards, go get the rebounds and get the game transitioning back to the offensive end. And Miller has really stepped up, and it's one of those things where, and you know, every coach says that they're this way. The degree to which you see that put into practice, it varies among coaches, but Buzz is definitely one of those guys. If you're going to go do the perceived little things, you're going to get minutes, right? If you're a great player, but you're not willing to, you know, you can be the most athletic guy out there, but you're not willing to do the hard work and work on the defensive end or clean up the boards or whatever it is, your minutes are going to hurt because of that. So Emmanuel Miller is a classic case of a guy who isn't doing tremendous things offensively, but because he's doing the right things from a defensive perspective and from a rebounding perspective, he's getting pretty significant minutes. I mean, 31 minutes against Oregon State, that's pretty solid for a freshman.
It is, and it's had an interesting knock-on effect to the rest of the lineup, because it's moved Flag to the three. Obviously, you have either French or Gordon always in at the one. It seems like generally Jackson and Chandler are splitting time at the two, which hasn't left much for old Chuck Mitchell. He only got 14 minutes in this win over Oregon State after only 7 in the win over TIU Corpus Christi. I'm starting to feel like he just might be a casualty of this new setup, because our situation on the glass was dire. Our situation defensively had really dipped in almost an unacceptable way after that solid start in the opening 2 weeks of the season. And Chuck was kind of not really helping in either of those areas, right? So you had a guy who wasn't really that useful defensively. Certainly, you know, at 6'1", he's not going to give you much on the boards. And then even with him in the lineup, you're still at or near the bottom of the D1 metrics in just about every major offensive category. I could see why Buzz would just say, well, shoot, let's just focus on defensive rebounding then. Like, you know, if I'm not getting an offensive spark from this guy anyway. And I think the end result here, Blake, is, you know, he hit a big three in the game against Oregon State. I think he has value as a spot-up shooter. I think I could really see him looking at a seventh or eighth man role moving forward, barring injury.
Yeah, I think you're right. And really the thing with Chuck is he's struggled with his shooting percentages. He was a great shooter last year, probably one of the best shooters on the team. And this year he's really struggled with field goal percentage. So if he's not a significant contributor on the defensive end, he's not cleaning up the boards, and he's not knocking down shots, he is going to kind of be relegated to a seventh or eighth man in the rotation role. And the other knock-on effect that you kind of touched on, but I do want to expand on this, Savion moving to a three is much better for Savion's game. Savion is not a four. He was playing a four out of necessity, but he is not a four. So I think the results speak for themselves. Savion, after struggling for a good part of the season, had 13 points against Oregon State. He was 5 of 8 from the floor. He had two threes, 5 rebounds. I mean, this was what you expected to see from Savion. Maybe a little bit under on the scoring perspective, but this was a return to the Savion of old, where for several weeks now he had looked kind of out of sorts, and he just hadn't looked comfortable really since the earliest stages of the season. And I think you saw him reemerge into a role that he's more comfortable playing, and one that's more suited to his style. So this was a really big win for the Aggies. I'm really happy for the team, for the program in its entirety, right? Top to bottom, coaches, staff, everybody. This is one of those big wins that I think could build some momentum headed into conference play, which is a very stark difference from what we saw 3 weeks or almost 4 weeks ago in Orlando at the Orlando Invitational. that was a rough go, and I think it had many of us kind of scratching our heads and wondering where this team was headed.
You know, it was rough, and I almost hate to go back, but given how long it's been since we've talked, we do need to go back, right? And I think it actually helps set the stage for just how impressive this Oregon State win was, is to think about where we were 3 weeks ago and just how bad things were in Orlando. I don't want to live in this place for too long. I don't like this 3 weeks ago timeline. It wasn't fun, but it's worth mentioning, and it helps set up the story for how quickly we've turned things around. So yeah, let's hit Harvard, and there's not really a ton of game flow to discuss. Blake, what I'd rather talk about is the nature of how we lost these games in Orlando. So in the game against Harvard, we kept it reasonably close before fading late. I wouldn't say it was necessarily a one-possession game down the stretch. Heading into that game against Harvard, they did appear to be built to attack some of our problem areas. At this point, we had yet to introduce Miller into the starting lineup, and it was basically Nebo and the four dwarfs trying their best on the glass. And as we might expect, Harvard absolutely murdered us down low. They were already kind of a surprisingly tall team for being a non-P5 team. And on top of that, they had a couple of guys who were, you know, 6'7", 6'8", with really good offensive rebounding metrics. I remember you and I talked about this in the lead up to this game to begin with. It played out about as we expected on that front, to the tune of a 40-30 rebounding advantage for Harvard. But what's worse than that is we had a 7-16 assist to turnover ratio. Our offensive game was static, it was slow, it was uninspired. The end result was a particularly ugly 62-51 loss to Harvard. Blake, I don't know what else you want to hit on this one. I'll just say that it didn't really look that great. We were headed towards the loser's bracket. We were hoping we could grab two wins or at least one, but this certainly was not the opener you wanted.
No, definitely not. And the thing is Harvard could shoot the ball. They were 22 of 22 from the line. Free throws, 22 of 22. That's incredible as a team to shoot perfect on 20 plus free throws.
That's a Harvard statistic right there. You know, doesn't the world make sense when teams act exactly as they're supposed to, right? I mean, that is just some Harvard stuff right there.
Exactly. Yeah. When good shooters shoot well, the world makes sense. And it's one of those things, you know, we've talked about this for a while. A&M has really struggled over the last 3 to 4 seasons with free throw shooting, and it can really make a difference in a game. And you know, you look at this one, A&M went 14 of 23, Harvard went 22 of 22. There's a nine point difference. Yeah, it was an 11 point an 11 point loss, but there's, you know, that's a huge momentum swing and an indicator of, you know, when you're doing the little things right and when you're taking advantage of points that are given to you, you know, things are going to generally work in your favor. So it wasn't a great start to the tournament. And I don't think we realized at the time, or I didn't realize watching this game at the time, how badly things were going to go. So in that sense, let's jump into the Temple game.
So let's do it. And whereas Harvard was a game that appeared to be a coin flip as we entered it, you know, and I could see that it's a game we wanted to win, but a loss certainly looked possible, and kind of playing close, fading down the stretch, succumbing to the obvious weaknesses that aligned with Harvard's strengths. That one was somewhat easy to take, right? Heading into Temple, I would say Temple is better than Harvard, even though we were in the loser's bracket. Temple is a solid team. You know, they're a team that makes noise in the NCAA tournament every now and again. And I thought, oh man, we're going to have a tight one on our hands. What I did not think is that Temple was going to blow us out of the water. And that's exactly what happened in this one. They built a 32-18 halftime lead. We carved our way back in. I think we opened up the first part of the second half with a 17-8 advantage. We kind of got it down into single digits. And then they slammed the door with a 25-7 run that effectively took the rest of the second half. And the problem here, Blake, is that I felt we submitted pretty meekly in this game, right? There was not a lot of fight. There was not a lot of – this is the first time I really noticed that the defensive intensity, which up to that point had carried us even on our days when the shooting wasn't there, it was nowhere to be found against Temple. Guys were wide-ass open. Our rotations were slow. At this point, I know the structure of this pod is weird because these are problems we have since solved. The defensive effort on the floor, the defensive unit involving Mitchell and Flag at the four, like these things, they just weren't working, right? And so – honestly, Temple just blew us out of the water, and this was a particularly frustrating game that, and just to make it worse, right, to play this poorly over Thanksgiving break, that's when a lot of people are tuning in for the first time, and we really kind of scuffed a really good chance to at least get people excited about the Buzz era early. I don't know what else you want to hit in this one other than to say that I felt that this was the first time I saw an effort problem on the floor. I'll leave it that way.
Yeah, there was definitely an effort issue. I think I will step back, and I know this may seem a bit hindsight is 2020 or a bit of revisionist history. I didn't feel good about a matchup with Temple. This one just didn't. I felt like Temple was a pretty salty team, and they proved it, man. They're solid, and they looked really good. But a lot of that was also A&M didn't look good, and you kind of question, was it Temple making A&M look bad, or was it just simply a lack of effort? I think there was a little bit of both. Temple's a good team, but I don't think the Aggies brought their best effort into this one, and you hate to say that, but it was not a pretty game. They didn't look right.
So yeah, aside from the defense, aside from the fact the rotation wasn't really set, those same problems resurfaced that had hit us 24 hours prior. The assist to turnover ratio in this game was 8-13, which now meant we were working at a 15-29 deficit in over the course of 48 hours, and we got beat on the glass 38-33, and on top of all that, we still weren't really shooting well. So I mean, you don't take care of the basketball, you don't rebound well. Your team is in flux in terms of guys aren't really sure of their roles yet. We're not rotating well. We're not shooting well. I mean, it really was just about as bad of a start as you could get to the tournament until we played Fairfield. So that's where things I felt truly hit rock bottom. I don't know. Before we get to the 0-2 seventh place classic, anything else you want to hit from Temple?
No, I think I think you pretty well summarized it there. It was an ugly game all the way around, but it was unfortunately a harbinger of what was to come against Fairfield.
And this was the one for me, right? I mean, this is when I was just glad a live mic was not put in front of me after this game, because after this loss to Fairfield, I was livid. This 67-62 loss, it was a tight game. I mean, it shouldn't really be a tight game. Fairfield is a team in the KenPom 290s. They don't really belong in a close game with us, but there we were in a close game with Fairfield and at the ass end of the Orlando Invitational. The part of this game that was absolutely maddening is that the Fairfield had one offensive threat, a guy named Landon Taliaferro. All he could do was shoot, and he was their only offensive threat, and we left this man open repeatedly all day long. I don't know if you, for those of you who were able to watch the game with the sound on, poor Dan Dakich, the color commentator, was just beside himself at how the way we were leaving this guy open. He was just, he wanted to go out there and he wanted to go coach the guys really on the floor right then. You could tell it was just driving him insane. And yeah, it was an ugly loss. It was an ugly loss, 67-62. And it was the first time, Blake, that I felt we had a legitimate split in the Aggie Hoops community since Buzz had come on board. So it was a split, but it was a split in the exact opposite direction of what we're used to. So think about the split we had last year and in previous years where it was like, oh, we have a good team now, but is this the right move for the future? Now the argument was, well, we know we've got the right move for the future, but is Buzz doing a good job right now? Is there a reason for us to be this bad? And there was some pretty significant difference of opinion between you and myself, between the larger swaths of the A&M basketball community online. It was really kind of a divisive issue. And I will say now that I've landed here, there's no point in providing a short-term grade right now. There's no value in grading Buzz Williams in his opening 5 weeks on the job. But at that point, had you polled me after the Fairfield game, I would say he's not doing a good job. Like his opening salvo here hasn't gone well. So that was kind of the problem. And it feels weird to kind of slip back into this mode on the back of something that had so successful, 24 hours ago. But yeah, the loss to Fairfield, it really felt bad. At that point, it felt like we were cemented as the worst Power 5 team in the country. And above all else, it just felt like there wasn't really a good reason for us to be that bad. So help me out here. What was your mental headspace in the aftermath of that loss?
Yeah. So we had an extended conversation amongst ourselves and a couple of other friends about the state of the program after the Temple loss. And I think after the Temple loss, I was of the mindset, hey, look, Temple's a good team. Harvard is a good team. These aren't, are they top 25 teams? No, but these are easily KenPom top 100 teams. This wasn't a surprise to me, but then the Fairfield loss was a shock. And I think I had to do a lot of searching myself and I came to the conclusion, and I know that, there was some comments back and forth amongst our group of friends. And my point was like, look, I'm not happy with the results. I don't like the loss to Fairfield. It was ugly. There was once again, a lack of effort. The team is frustrated, but there's no sense in, you know, one person made the comment, well, you need to, you know, we need to make the statement to Buzz that this isn't acceptable. And my perspective was, you think he doesn't know that? Like, do you really think that Buzz Williams needs to be told that a loss to Fairfield is unacceptable? There's no, you get no use out of sending a message at this stage in his career to say that this is an unacceptable loss. I mean, he's disappointed. The whole team is disappointed. I at that point, you know, I think you just kind of have to ride things out. And I'll be honest with you, from I've had these experience with coaching changes. So, you know, I played sports in high school. In football, we had three head coaches in the span of my 4 years of high school. Change is tough. It's really hard when you're in the rhythm of something and all of that gets unsettled. And one of the things I'll be honest with you, one of the things I've done over the last couple of weeks is actually go back and listen to some of the Buzz interviews. You know, even the interviews from Andrew Monaco did a really great interview with Buzz when he was first hired. And Buzz basically called exactly what you've seen happen this season. And I think it really, for me, put this Fairfield loss in perspective. And Buzz said, look, the way things are going to work is the offense we're going to run this year isn't going to be the offense that I want to run over the long term. I've got to figure out what I have, and I've got to figure out how I can build something that works for the guys that are in the program and have been in the program for 1, 2, 3 years, as well as for the new guys who are coming in that can transition those new guys into the proper style of play that I want them to be playing in 3 years when they're, you know, when they're seniors. So, you know, it was kind of revelatory into his mindset, and it helps explain a lot of these results and some of the things that you're seeing on the floor. You know, he is going to build this. And I made this point to our group of friends. Sometimes if you're going to restore the house, you have to strip it down to the studs first, because if the plumbing and the electrical are shit, you can restore the house, but you're still going to have plumbing and electrical issues, right? New drywall isn't going to fix that. So from that perspective, I see what Buzz is doing as restoring the house, and he's got to strip it down to the studs in order to get it to the place that he wants it to be.
Well, I'll close that by saying this. I hope that was us stripping it down to the studs, and it's certainly the narrative since then has supported that argument, because even though the two performances immediately after that game against Fairfield weren't particularly great, they did show clear areas of improvement in areas of need. And more specifically, they showed Buzz making specific adjustments that are like easy to digest, right, for the casual observer. Kind of something to cling to, even if the result on the court isn't that great. So I think this is a good time for us to transition to the next game, which was the game against Texas. And before we jump into the game against Texas, we're going to take a quick break to hear from one of our sponsors. All right, so let's talk Texas. We were 10.5-point dogs in this neutral site game against Texas, and coming off the loss against Fairfield, it was a pretty dire situation. Hats off to all the Aggies that made the trip to the brand-new Dickies Arena in Fort Worth. And I came into this game, as many Aggie Hoops supporters did, harping on two things: shooting and rebounding. Our shot selection had been poor the entire trip in Orlando, as you and I just laid out. We were getting murdered on the boards the entire trip in Orlando, and of course, we weren't taking care of the ball in Orlando. The game against Texas reflected fixes in two out of those three, right? Because we actually did do a pretty decent job on the glass, and I have to say, we did a good job on the glass against the Texas team that includes a presumptive NBA pick, Kai Jones, who's really kind of one of those guys who makes his hay strictly by being a nuisance on the glass and by protecting the rim, and we kept him at bay, and we also had a much better shot selection. It's surprising in a game that you lose by 10, the final score was 60-50, you know, not to bury the lead or anything, but in the 60-50 loss, we shot 48%, which, you know, something doesn't appear to add up there, right? You're like, well, we did well on the glass. We shot 48%. What could have happened? 22 turnovers happened. So that was the third piece that we didn't fix, is that we turned the ball over like crazy. And what's worse, and Buzz touched on this in his post-game interview, these are what he referred to as live turnovers. This is not we failed to execute a lob pass and the ball goes out of bounds under the basket. This was a deflection, a block, something happening where the ball is now flying back at our own basket in bounds. And so what that led to, Blake, that's a 22-5 transition advantage for Texas in a game that they won by 10. And that was it. That was everything. So that spoke to the entire margin of victory. Our defense was actually much better. It was a much better defensive effort compared to Orlando. Texas really didn't shoot the ball well. It was kind of an ugly game for that reason, but it really kind of spoke to given our talent level, we can't even take a single facet of the game off, right? Because even though we had fixed just about everything, we didn't fix the turnovers. And I think the way this team is built with the current roster construction, if you fail in one area, we're just not going to win many P5 games. So the final score was 60-50. I did feel better about the rebounding particularly, and this was the first of the three games that I had discussed where we've slotted Miller down low and kind of fixed that rebounding problem. The turnovers were pretty nasty, but I still consider that an improved effort. How did you feel relative to Orlando?
Yeah, I echo all of your sentiments. You know, I felt better about the rebounding. The turnovers were just horrendous, but once again, this program has kind of been prone to those turnovers. So it felt like a bit of a relapse, but not unexpected. I will give credit to the team. Here's the statistic that made me say, okay, wait a minute, something's different here. The team went 3 of 11 from three. Now you would say, wait a minute, going 3 of 11 from behind the arc is a good thing. The denominator of that equation, 11 shots from behind the arc, to me was a good thing. They only took 11 3-point attempts. That to me says, okay, they've come to the realization that they're not shooting the ball well. So we need to kind of pull back on that side of the thing. As opposed to, for example, the Temple game where they had 33 3-point attempts. The game against Harvard, I think they had 20 3-point attempts. And then Fairfield, they had 27. So I think the realization of, hey, we're not shooting the ball well from behind the arc, we've got to change our style of play. Texas was the first game where you really saw them start to adapt a new style and force something that's not working.
We adapted a new style, and then we really appeared to make changes. And even though it's not about making me happy, about making you happy, about making the casual fan happy, it does help to see a change, and not like a change, not a subtle change in the way like we flex and flow or like back cut or anything that, you know, you can't see without some like pretty detailed game tape review. Just basic fixes. Put more tall guys in. Don't shoot as many threes. Like
right.
The sort of things that you can latch onto. Like, okay, we are trying to fix our shooting and rebounding problems by these very basic fixes. And I think the Fairfield loss, you know, again, if this is the strip it down to the studs moment, I think that was kind of a, well, what's the first thing you do after you strip it down to the studs? Like, oh man, we're getting killed on the boards. Let's play more tall people. Oh man, we're like fifth worst in the nation in shooting threes. Let's shoot less threes. You know, it was kind of like this reductive first grade reasoning, but it did. It led to a better product. And, you know, again, it was a game we lost by 10, and Texas at some points had the lead at you know, 14-15, and it wasn't particularly fun to lose to them, but it was an improvement. And that really is what this season is going to be about, because the results, despite how much fun we had against Oregon State, they're not going to be there this year. I mean, I think we're probably looking at a couple more dry spells coming in the early part of 2020. But if you can look for fixes like this, and if you can look for areas of improvement, and if you can look for what has become a really improved stretch of play from Emmanuel Miller, who had 14 boards in this game, things like that are what we're going to try to grab from this season. So that kind of closes the book for me on this game, other than to say, I hope we play Texas every year. It would be nice to play them next year and kind of knock the smile off their face that everybody had walking out of the Dickies Arena.
Yeah, I agree. And back to your point about the fixes, I think that for me, the biggest change is just that change in mindset, right? With the previous regime, and you don't want to keep going back to, you know, what Kennedy did wrong from a perception standpoint or any of that. But it felt like there was a resistance to change. This is the system I've implemented. This is the way we're going to do things. Whether it works or it doesn't work, this is the way it's going to run. And it felt like when things weren't going well, what are you really doing to fix it? I mean, these minor fixes aren't changing the outcome. This felt like, okay, the minor fixes are over. We've got to go back to the fundamentals and change something about the fundamental identity of the way that this team is playing in order to improve the results. And so that, to me, that's a comforting outcome to see, you know, to see that willingness to step away from this principled approach of this is how we're going to do things.
And earlier when I said I was done talking about this game, I lied. I do have one more thing I want to mention. So I think something that we fixed is, and I think we saw this in the last 5 to 6 minutes of the Texas game, we kind of got out of our own heads a bit and we just started chasing the game. You know, whenever we moved out of, oh man, we need to run the Buzz offense to perfection and get a good shot, you know, within 15 feet, but also not shoot too quick. You know, we can, you know, all those kind of competing thoughts that tend to grind our possessions to a halt. And we're honestly in the Texas game, it was those, that type of thinking specifically that was leading to the turnovers. In the last few minutes, the guys just played ball. It was beat my man, get a good shot, you know, get a stop. And we simplified the game to its absolute core. And in those last few minutes, we played well. We got good looks. We actually hit a couple of threes. We played decently. It was actually kind of fun to watch. And again, you know, that effectively served to close the game from like 17 to 10 or 17 to like 8 or 7 before Texas pulled back away again. But it was kind of an interesting look into, well, maybe this is what we should be doing a little more often. Not all the time, but as I wrote about it, I said, we got to chase that feeling. We don't need to chase the we're down 10 feeling, but we got to chase this feeling of beat my man, get a good shot up, get a stop, you know, just kind of reducing the game to its basic level. And I think that's something that we didn't necessarily fix by the time we played A&M Corpus Christi, but we did definitely fix against Oregon State, right? Is that you could tell we were, because if you think about it, Blake, asking this team to make 10 passes over the course of a 25-second possession, that's, I mean, you're begging for disaster, right? Like, that's just not smart. We don't have that type of team this year that's going to be able to make that many passes against a good D1 defense without something going wrong. So as we simplified game things near the end of that game, I think we may have seen the type of ball we might start playing a little more often. And now.
Yep, I think you're exactly right. All right, no more Texas, yeah. So let's jump into Corpus Christi then.
So the A&M Corpus Christi game, it stung a little. We won, so that's the fun part. We won 63-60 at home against A&M Corpus Christi, but it was kind of a disaster of a game, to be honest. We, you know, the good feelings that we had, if you can call them that, after a double-digit loss to Texas, you know, the things that we had fixed appeared to completely disappear in the early portions of this game against A&M Corpus Christi, so much so that we were down 31-24 at halftime. After a particularly putrid shooting and kind of defensive effort in that first half. And then I would say, like, Corpus Christi kind of even pushed it to, I think it was 11 or 12 early part in the second half, at which point, you know, we're down 11 to the 298th ranked team in the nation. Like, let's get it together, boys. And I will say, you know, at that point we did flash a quick 11-0 run on the heels of Gordon and Miller particularly playing well. But it was tight down the stretch. It was really tight down the stretch. And we were kind of bailed out by a dubious traveling call against Corpus Christi as they had the ball down three that allowed us to kind of skate by with, you know, kind of that old tug of the collar of like, oh, we'll just take this one. And I will say this, it was an ugly game. We didn't play well, but the college basketball landscape is rife, I would say, like, more so than normal with these really ugly losses for P5 teams all over the place this year. So in that context, I'll just say, whatever, we won, and we'll hit the nuts and bolts of what we thought we learned. But I think I'm just learning in these home paycheck games, if things get weird, just take the W and get out of there.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Sometimes you just have to chalk up a win and move on. I can remember many, many years ago, there were years that there were losses to A&M Corpus Christi. So, you know, you take a win anytime you can get it at this point and just be happy about it. It wasn't a good performance by any means. But I do think you're starting to see kind of this reemerging identity. And I felt like this was kind of a continuation of what we saw in the Texas game where, you know, the identity and the style of play was changing and morphing. Teams kind of, you know, easing back into that and trying to figure out, okay, how do we merge those things together, this old and new, and put together a style of play that will win you games? So I think while it wasn't the result that you would hope for against this caliber of competition, honestly, when you look at the schedule, that's kind of been the story of the season with even these lower tier teams. We haven't really blown anybody's doors off. Monroe was a 6-point win. Troy was a 4-point win. You know, these games that you kind of look at and say, oh, well, yeah, we cruised a victory and it wasn't really that close. Yeah, but it should have been a lot bigger margin of victory. And it wasn't. So I think that, you know, it's one of those things that what I really want to see moving forward is what the team does next week against Texas Southern. That's a really good opportunity to show, okay, we've learned, we've adapted, we've taken what happened against Oregon State, and we can translate that into positive momentum and adapt that style of play and continue to play in that manner to take care of a team that you should beat pretty handily.
And in terms of merging the old with the new, that took the form of Emmanuel Miller straight up just taking Chuck Mitchell's minutes in this game. Miller was stellar, dropping 20 points on 7 of 8 shooting, which led to him being named SEC Freshman of the Week. And this kind of cemented what appears to be this newer wave approach of Nebo at the 5, Miller at the 4, Flag at the 3. Sorry, Chuck, you're the odd man out. So yeah, he only played 7 minutes in this game. And the one thing I will say is, so just kind of in the terms of building this narrative of, like, you know, Orlando was wretched, but we did get better in certain phases, game over game over game. This was the turnover improvement game. So we had posted a season low of turnovers in 12. There were a host of other problems. But again, it's nice to see a concerted effort to fix the thing that was so terrible and the very, you know, the actual reason that you lost in the game prior. One thing I will say, I shouldn't say one thing I will say because I keep saying five things. The next thing I will say about A&M Corpus Christi, this was another game where I felt we really, really looked like we were trying to draw these possessions out early. I don't know why we would do that, particularly in a game against A&M Corpus Christi, but there was one moment I wanted to bring to your attention where there was somebody from A&M Corpus Christi gambled for a pass out top and missed. Instead of pushing, would have been a 5-on-4 advantage, we kind of just stood there. Let the dude recover, get back in his spot, and then went about our business, passing the ball around, waiting to take a shot under 10, which to me just says this is coached. This is a mandate, is don't take a shot too early in the shot clock, which I get at some level. If you're a bad team, the easiest way for you to stay close is to minimize the number of possessions. But again, that's going to be a line we kind of have to straddle.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I knew exactly what moment you were going to be reviewing with that comment, because I noticed the same thing. And you're right, it is coached. It's just trying to minimize the damage. And I think that's part of Buzz's style of play, right? Is you're going to get if you get a good look early in the shot clock, great. If not, let's grind it out, right? Get it down, make them work on the defensive end, because they're going to pay for it there. And there, you know, that's less energy they have to bring at you on the offensive end. So I do think that is certainly part of the style of play that Buzz is choosing to encourage at this point. But, you know, I do agree that there are points in the game where you have to say, okay, this is a prime opportunity. They're a man down. Attack the rim. Go. Don't wait. So force the rotations and find the open man. But I think those things will come in time. There's certain levels of comfort that the team has to develop, right, to understand where how do I push this? Where do I push this? Those types of things. And I think that over time you'll see those issues.
So I think, Blake, this is the game. This is now the Andre Gordon part of the pod, because I've been kind of waiting to interject exactly when and where to talk about his improved play. And I think A&M Corpus Christi in particular is where I saw it, because it was he and Miller specifically that were the catalyst for the run that kind of steered this thing back out of disaster zone and it ended up, you know, helping us secure the win. But there was a couple of plays in particular that really make me excited about this kid, because his problems, you know, typically you think about a point guard who comes to the P5 level. I mean, this guy's a true freshman. Typically a point guard at the P5 level isn't athletically ready. He's athletically ready. I mean, with him, and so there's a couple of plays I want to talk about in particular. Where A&M Corpus, they showed hard on a pick and roll where the big man was clearly told stay with him and force him to cut back to the inside where there's help. And both times he had the speed and the upper body strength to get around the big man and to push his way towards the bucket, which you might think like, oh, okay, job done. But I can tell you from my limited time playing point guard, at that point, the job is not done. In fact, that's now you've got the hardest part of the possession, because you are now moving inside. You're moving towards the top of the three-point line, or kind of in towards the free throw line, with now two people chasing behind you, the other three coming towards you, and it's on you to make the right move. And both times he dumped it off to Nebo for an easy bucket, one time for the alley that actually capped the 11-0 run. And I remember thinking to myself, that's grown man point guard play. Like that is someone who is ready to contribute at the P5 level. So it's really, really useful to see that we have someone who's athletically there already as a true freshman. Time to time, you know, we do see mental lapses. Particularly, I noticed against Oregon State, which, you know, again, not to do another weird time lapse, another time jump in the pod, but when teams shift defenses possession to possession, he's still not there, right? He's not there's not the instantaneous recognition of maybe the set we need to get into or where the ball needs to go just to start things moving in the right direction. But I have seen him grow immensely. And even though French is the starter in name, I mean, Gordon is the best point guard on this team. He continues to get the lion's share of the minutes, and that's something I'm comfortable with.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think you see is he is a facilitate first point guard. He attacks the rim, but he attacks to facilitate. And he's much better from an attacking perspective than what you're going to get from French. It's just one of those situations where his size really works against him. Once he gets inside, he's just outmanned from a size perspective. But Gordon has enough size and athleticism that he can find Nebo and find Miller to help alleviate that pressure. So I think that, I love what I've seen from Gordon so far. He's not a score first point guard, which is definitely a departure from what we've seen over the past, I wanted to say the past 2 to 3 years with TJ Starks, but really it goes back even past that. I mean, you look at going back to, the days of Alex Caruso, right? Alex Caruso was a scoring point guard. So, we've had kind of this scoring point guard role. And here with Gordon, you don't really have that. He can score when he needs to, but he's looking to facilitate for others. And I think it definitely requires us to kind of change that mindset and say, okay, look, this is what we want this guy to be doing is attracting the attention, getting himself into places that causes the defense to rotate and create mismatches and find the open man. So he's doing an excellent job. I think, it gets... You feel like there's always these the cliched announcer commentary topics, which one of them is, well, Gordon was a high school quarterback. And, but I think that this is where kind of having that quarterback mindset actually comes into play. Right. He's looking to distribute. He's looking to get the ball in the hands of the open man. So I think that, he kind of, when you watch his play, you can say, oh, OK. That's why the quarterback thing makes sense. He's got very much that same sense about him of, distributing the ball and making the reads, finding the open man.
So that closes the book on A&M Corpus Christi. We weren't going to make you fine listeners wait this long to get to Oregon State, so of course we led with that. And I think now that means we can pretty much wrap it up here, Blake, and look forward to the next game. All I have to say about Texas Southern is that they are in their annual crazy road trip that they take every year to just basically collect as many paychecks as they can. The funny thing about this trip that they make is that they always give people, they always give at least two or three teams some trouble. Last year that took the form of them absolutely kicking our ass at Reed Arena by 15. But people also forget that Texas Southern went on the road and beat that Oregon team that made the Sweet 16 last year. And this year, Blake, they went up to Oregon and damn near did it again. So Oregon is ranked number 8. Texas Southern was leading that game, I think, by 1 with 2 or 3 minutes remaining, and Oregon ended up pulling it out down the stretch. So that's the squad that's coming to Reed Arena, although I will say that same squad has been boat raced by more than 30 in plenty of other games as well. So I'm not sure which version of the team's going to make the trip, but it appears they do have a ceiling capable of giving us a ton of trouble.
Absolutely. I think we learned that lesson last year. Do not sell Texas Southern short. This is a game that has the potential to pose a challenge. If guys think, oh, well, this is the last one before SEC play, if we start thinking about New Year's plans a little bit early, you could be in for a long night. So I would encourage, if you're local to the College Station area, as always, this is part of the Holiday Hoops promotion. There's lots of good deals on tickets out there. Go take in a game, take the family, and enjoy some Aggie basketball. Texas Southern's, they're not the most stellar opponent, but they have the ceiling of knocking off some good teams.
I will say one other interesting note is that, so that's our next game, but they will actually play at Arizona State just 2 days prior to coming to Texas, which I did not realize until I was checking this out right now. So they should be a little travel weary, and we will also get a pretty good look potentially at which version of that team is going to make the trip. If they give Arizona State a good game, I'm going to be officially put on notice, because that would be two really strong efforts back to back. But anyway, yeah, I'll keep tabs on that game on Saturday the 28th. I'll probably float that out there on Twitter, how that game goes. And then, like you said, Blake, Monday the 30th, they're in town, and our last chance to get a look at the guys before SEC play starts.
Yep. And as far as podcasts, so we will probably do an episode after the Texas Southern game to recap that game, kind of put together our full thoughts on the first half, roughly a third of the season, all the non-conference play, and then looking ahead to SEC play. So that'll be kind of our big transition into SEC. We'll hopefully roll that out a few days after the Texas Southern game. So looking forward to it. Hopefully,
I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, that should be a lot of fun. A lot of things to evaluate. There's a lot of coaches in the SEC. So yeah, there's going to be some good topics to cover there.
Yeah, there's some interesting stories to tell, because they're, you know, what appeared to be a really strong conference heading into October and November does not appear to be that anymore. There are some chinks in the armor as you work your way up and down the SEC, so it may not be quite as tough for us to capture a handful of conference victories as it might have appeared even 2 or 3 weeks ago. But again, we'll chat in more detail. Talk to you soon, buddy.
Take care.